with the lighting of a single candle, we move into the new year of the church and into a time of watching, a time of waiting, a time of preparing. We might be surprised that one candle can signal so much. I mean, it's just a little light, a little flame. But if you've ever had the experience of being in the dark, fumbling around for that one candle that you hid away in the event of a power outage, then you've had the experience of seeing the darkness give way to a solitary flame, like a gentle but persistent beacon of hope. We've been in the dark. That's our problem. Surrounded by it, at times blinded by it, and like a thick fog that migrates in when somebody leaves a door open, some of the darkness has found its way inside. And in this season of Advent, we begin to turn. We start to turn toward the light to awaken to God's promise once again. Advent means coming. And I know for some of you, this will be your first time of walking through the season of Advent. For some, this has been a practice of your whole life in worship. But still, we come to it fresh each time. See, we're waiting for the Lord's arrival, not just sitting by, not as being bystanders or bysitters, but waiting that's full of expectation. And in Advent, we join with others who have waited. We wait with those who waited for the Messiah to come. Over hundreds of years of darkness and silence, we wait with them. We wait for the Lord's coming again, when he will come as judge and king on the earth. And we also wait for that advent of the kingdom that's always happening, as the Lord is always coming into our lives, bringing his reality to us, his life, renewing and remaking us. So those are the different kinds of advent, but we wait for all of them. We prepare for each one. Now, each week of Advent, we'll light an additional candle on the Advent wreath. And the light will increase, and our longing will grow for the Lord's coming. It's like heading out on a long trip, long journey, whether you're on a plane going to the other side of the world, or you're in a car driving across country. The closer you get, the greater your desire to be there. And it's not just that you've been traveling a long time. There's more to it than that. In our minds, we begin to see and we begin to imagine what it will be like when we are greeted, when we greet the ones that we love. And in Advent, we are doing the same thing. We're seeking to grow the longing in our hearts for the arrival of the Lord. See, the hope and dream of arrival grows with each step, with each mile, with each candle. But today we begin with one, just one. And it's time to wake up, to have the still water of our lives stirred, to look around, to see what's going on, and to watch. I mentioned last Sunday that Susan and I took a very quick 36-hour trip to Atlanta last weekend to be with a friend who's dying. And she has this glorious journey she's on, and she's trusting in the Lord. And her radiance grows the closer she gets. She knows who she is. She knows where she's going. So there's a lot of joy, kind of a rich joy there. But anyway, coming back, in order to be here for the Sunday morning service, we took the first flight out of Atlanta while it was still dark. So we were up very, very early. And we were waiting in line at Hartsfield at the airport there with other people who were catching the first flight of the day, and they're all sort of bleary-eyed and not at their best, probably. As we were about to go in, get close to all the machines for security, a young woman pushed into the line. She just kept, I could see her, she was coming closer and closer, sort of frantic, a little frazzled with her, big bag she was pulling behind her. She says, I'm going to miss my plane. It boards in 5 minutes. And this isn't a small airport. And I said, where's your gate? And she told me, well, I knew that was the fourth stop on the train. And I looked at the people around us, and we kind of, you know, shook our heads. She says, no, I really want to try. I said, okay, well, then I did something that you wouldn't ordinarily do, but I didn't have my caffeine yet, and I pushed back a little bit, which just was for fun, and, I could have aroused something, and I just said to her, what have you been doing? Why are you so late? And she was very actually good-natured in her response. She goes, I don't know. She goes, I just wasn't paying attention. I guess I was sleeping. Well, she went to the front of the line, and I hope she made it. But see, as Advent begins, we all stand in solidarity with her. Because we also risk not paying attention. We also have been asleep. And you know, sleep has its place. It does. We couldn't live without sleep. But there is a time where we wake up, where we come alive, where we face the day. And on this first Sunday of Advent, as this candle is lit, I have to tell you, church, it's time to wake up. Jesus' own disciples and the converts that came to the Lord in faith in the first century, they faced this same issue. They wanted to know, when will the end be? They didn't say, oh, well, it's, you know, going to be after 2000 whatever. They were thinking it's now. Its arrival is on our doorstep. When will the Lord return? How will we know the time? What if we miss it? And instead of laying out, you know, careful timelines and so on, the scriptures offer a posture for us, an orientation, a way of living in the light at the end of time. Now, you know, we just talked about this a couple weeks ago, so I'm not going to address all that material, but if you're really interested, you can go online and listen, and this will follow upon that and builds upon that. When we were looking at Hebrews a couple of weeks ago, we did this very thing. But it's interesting that Advent begins with the long view. Instead of starting out small, Advent begins at the top of the ladder. We climb to the highest place and we look to the farthest point. We look to where the Lord is returning in glory. We begin there. It sort of seems backwards to me. But if you think about it, that's the right place to begin. Because if we begin here, looking with our heads raised, our eyes lifted to the horizon, then we won't miss the truth of the one that we receive at Bethlehem. There will be no misunderstanding of the one that's coming in the manger. The king and the child are one and the same. And we are watching and waiting not just for one event, but for both. And we can't receive the child only. We must receive the king and his coming as well. The Apostle Paul planted the church in Thessalonica. He preached there. He really began that work. It was a young church. It was immature. And not only that, it was being opposed by the synagogue in a very direct way. And Paul himself was forced to flee the city for his own safety. But away from this, away from these new believers, the ones he loved, he was deeply concerned about them. Would they make it? Would they have the strength? Would they remain faithful? Would they be steadfast and grow? I think there's a great resonance for us in reading this book, because at Redeemer, we know something about church planting, don't we? We know how difficult it is. We know how tenuous it can seem. We know how costly it is. We know what it is to be misunderstood. We know how people can turn away after a good beginning. But we also know how full of grace it is, how full of promise, how full of the Lord's presence. So Paul is not able to go himself, but he sends Timothy to this young congregation. And Timothy brings back to him, and Paul's in Corinth at this time, he brings to Paul a good report. Paul's encouraged by what he hears. But Timothy also brings two questions, and both of these questions have to do with the advent, the coming of the Lord. And the first question is this: if a Christian dies before the Lord comes, will they miss the kingdom? I love that question. It's sort of tender because you hear the desire in it not to miss it, what the Lord is doing. And the second question is this, and it's more to the point, really. When will it happen? When will the Lord come in glory? And Paul answers these in the way that he chooses to do so. But he calls them primarily to maturity in Christ. Not to an obsession with times and so on of the second coming. He addresses it. He says, it's very important. You need to know. And here are some things you need to know. But as a father speaking to his children in the faith, he invites them to wake up. He invites them to grow up. He invites them to come fully alive. And may the Lord make you increase and abound in love for one another and for all, just as we abound in love for you. And may he so strengthen your hearts in holiness that you may be blameless before our God and Father at the coming of our Lord Jesus with all his saints. He's saying, live to please God. This is the first thing I want you to do. This is primary for you. To grow up into the faith and the maturity that the Lord is calling you to. You see, his concern was for them and for their readiness. His concern was for the life that they're living. His concern was for the life of Christ in them. In the next chapter from the reading that we have today from 1 Thessalonians 3, as he continues to lay out what it is to be mature and what life in maturity looks like in community, he says this, chapter 4, he says, do it more and more. Let it grow. Let it abound. Let it continue. How will we know the Lord's coming? How will we see it? Wake up. Grow. Be mature. Abound in love for one another. These must come first. If not, then we won't be ready. If not, we will miss it and it will spring on us. Chapter 5, verse 6 of this same letter. So let us not sleep as others do, but let us keep awake and be sober. This is not a private wakefulness. It's not a solitary watch like a soldier that's sent out, you know, guard the perimeter at 4 in the morning, walk back and forth by yourself. That's not the watch. The watch is one we share, offering our gifts and maturity to each other in the Lord. Now, it's interesting when you talk about this to people, people will naturally respond, I'm awake. Don't be silly. Look at all I'm doing, all I'm involved in. A sleeping person couldn't be as productive as I am, or at least as busy. Some of you may remember comedian Tim Allen, who was hot stuff in the 90s. Tim had his struggles in life. Great career as a comedian, but it came out of deep pain. It came out of his own struggle with drugs. He spent time in prison as a drug dealer before his career. And in an interview, he said this: how much of the day are you awake? You think, I got to get the dry cleaning, I got to get going, and this, and this, and this. All of a sudden, it's dinner time, and then there's just a moment of connection with your spouse or your friends. Then you read, maybe, and go to bed. Wake up and it's the same all over. You're not awake. You're not living. You're not experiencing. And we start early medicating ourselves. We start kids early on television and video games and so on. It's daunting, he says, how many possibilities there are in life for every one of us. But rather than face the fact that I may be a failure or a success, and he says, I think both of them are terrifying, people find diversions, Now, he's not speaking from a place of faith or as a preacher. He's just saying it's normal. Look around. We're not awake. We go through sleep, walk like we're go through life like we're walking in our sleep. In describing the second advent in our gospel reading today, Jesus tells his disciples that they also must be awake and watchful. And he gives them a picture. He says, you know, when you look at trees and the leaves start coming out when it's springtime, then you know summer is just around the corner. So also, there is an awareness that must precede the coming of the Lord's kingdom. Wake up, be alert, watch, pray. I really do like the way the Message puts this, especially in this season. Eugene Peterson puts it this way. But be on your guard. Don't let the sharp edge of your expectation get dulled by parties and drinking and shopping. Otherwise, that day is going to take you by complete surprise, spring on you suddenly like a trap, for it's going to come on everyone, everywhere at once. So whatever you do, don't go to sleep at the switch. Jesus didn't withhold details of the end. And we have these in chapter 20, earlier in chapter 21. But he calls them here as he's summarizing to watch, to stand up and look, to pray to be able to stand before the Lord when he comes. And see, this requires some degree of intention, of desire, and even courage. And as Paul shows us, we offer strength to each other. It requires each one of us. You know, it's a simple theme today. You're getting it. It's wake up. Wake up. Watch. See, Advent really is a great gift. Advent helps us to tell the truth about the Lord's coming and about our own condition. If we rush to Christmas, if we join in the merriment too soon, then we risk covering our own unreadiness. We miss being truthful about our broken legs that need to mend before the dance can begin. There's some things we need to take care of. There's some things I need to take care of before I can invite the Lord fully into my life when he comes. Advent puts things in the right order. Christmas begins in our, you know, in our society, at least in the shopping calendar, about, when would you say? October? Well, yeah, maybe so. And what happens on December 26th? It is gone. It is just... phew. It's gone. There's very little celebration of the Lord's arrival. Advent puts us in really a way to approach the great, tremendous season of Christmas. You notice in the bulletin today that there are cries for mercy for the Lord. It's a time for us to look at ourselves, to come to terms with our own sleepiness. Many people right now are weighed down with despair and with loss of hope. We know this is true. And see, we don't want to miss the coming of the Lord into our lives this season because of what it means, not just for us, but for what it means for others. In other words, we have a role of calling people to the light, of calling people into watchfulness and wakefulness. Even as we prepare ourselves, we're also reaching out to those around us saying, the Lord's coming. The Lord is coming. He's bringing his joy and life and hope. Get ready. See, people want to know, do I believe in the dreams or do I believe in my nightmares? And we want to say, wake up. Wake up and see. See what the Lord is doing. There's a wonderful story of waking up in the Lord and of mission that I want to share with you. It takes place around World War II. And in April of 1942, Army Corporal Jacob DeShazer boarded a bomber with his pilot and co-pilot. And their mission was to bomb Tokyo and the surrounding cities. The bombing was a success, but they never received word as to where they were to land. And with fuel running low, the pilot gave the order for all on board to jump. DeShazer made a safe landing, but he was immediately taken prisoner by the Japanese. He was tortured and then placed into solitary confinement. He remained in captivity for almost 2 years, struggling with starvation and with illness. One of the fellow prisoners died of dysentery, and at that point, the captors decided to ease up a little bit on them and allow them some reading material, including a Bible. There was only one Bible in this camp, and because of that, DeShazer had to wait 6 months before he could read it. Expectantly waiting, desiring to read it. Finally, when it came his turn, he read the scriptures over and over again. And though he had been raised in a Christian home, he had never come awake to that faith. He had never come alive in the Lord. He'd never really submitted to Christ. And on the final day he was allowed to have the Bible, he read in Romans chapter 10 and confessed his belief in Christ and begged for forgiveness. Bad habits don't go away easily, and attitudes, especially in a prison camp, prisoner of war camp. And the guards treated him ruthlessly, but every time he wanted to respond, the scriptures started in his head saying, "Love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you." See, he was coming alive. He was waking up in the Lord. And so he began every day to respond to the guards with some kind word. And over time, over many months, their attitude towards him began to change. The war went on, and he was finally released after the end of the war, but his desire was for the people of Japan. Something had been awakened in him. And in 1948, he returned to Japan with his wife as a missionary. And by that time, army chaplains had distributed his story in pamphlets, because he was the one who had forgiven his captors. And everywhere he went, people had heard of him, and they knew of his experiences. A man came to see him, Mitsuo Fuchida. He had been the commander that led all the planes that attacked Pearl Harbor. Because he had read this testimony of DeShazer, he had purchased a New Testament, read it, and had accepted Christ. DeShazer welcomed him as a brother and counseled him to be baptized. And within a short time, Fuchida became an evangelist, preaching in Japan and all over the world. And in 1959, a dream came true for DeShazer when he moved to Nagoya to establish a Christian church in the city he had bombed. In the city he had bombed, he planted a church. See, he went through a deep advent, didn't he? A dark time, but a time that the Lord had called him to so he could awaken him and send him to do this work so that the kingdom would come. We don't know in this advent to what the Lord's calling us. what he desires to awaken in each of us, in us as a community, in us as a people. But as we step into Advent through the light of a single candle in the dark, we rub the sleep out of our eyes, we stretch, we yawn, and we start to wake up. We don't want to miss the big day.